Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because I get to talk about 2003's School of Rock with the most metal person I know. Please welcome back to the show, the rocking Alejandro Gonzalez. Welcome back, Alejandro.
Thank you.
That was it. Nothing like for those about to rock. We salute you. Not just thank you. Just a contrite. What's metal about a contrite thank you?
I know, right? That's so not in character for me.
In your defense, I didn't mention that I was going to say any of that. So you could not have prepared anything. Yeah, exactly. I just assumed you're currently wearing a leather jacket and making like the devil horns with your hands.
I sleep in my leather jacket.
That has to be uncomfortable.
No, not when you've worn it so much.
I guess so. So yeah, I'm excited that you are here and talking about School of Rock, which I'm going to let you take lead on when we get there because this was your pick to talk about. A couple things before we get into that. One, I want to thank the very nice folks who have donated to F This Movie in the past several weeks. I don't know how to handle the donation thing. They come in somewhat sporadically, and they're always appreciated. But I've had some people say, like, yeah, maybe don't mention my name. So I don't ever mention these anymore because I don't know who wants to be mentioned and who doesn't. So
yeah, I'm super conflicting.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, out anyone, but I also don't want anyone to feel like, hey, I donated so that I could hear my name read, and then I didn't hear it, and now I'm angry. So,
well, to be fair, I don't think anyone donates to get their name read.
No, but it's nice to be recognized, right? So what I'm thinking is if you've donated or if you donate in the future, you would like us to say thank you and name you on the podcast, please let me know. Shoot me an email, send me a message on Twitter, whatever. Just let us know. That having said that, and sort of unrelated to all of that, I do want to send a very special thank you to our listener reader Colin. Thank you very much, Colin. This show goes out to you. Secondly. There's some big news going on in your world.
You have recently,
yeah, you are going to be covering a film festival coming up. And I know we'll talk a little bit about it when we get into what have you seen lately, but I thought maybe you'd want to talk for just a minute about your new gig.
Well, I'm going to be covering Popcorn Frights here for Dread in August.
That's Dread Central for those of you who aren't like super cool and just shorten it to Dread.
I'm super excited. It's like really my first festival coverage.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to expect, and I feel like a little overwhelmed, but
explain
in the best way.
I'm excited to read your coverage, but explain what Popcorn Frights is to those who don't live in Florida.
Okay. It's a film festival. It's relatively new. It's been around probably 4 years now. I think this is the fourth year. And these guys put on screenings here every couple of months, which is really a big deal to me because we don't really have like a genre community here at all. And so they've established one here that feels really passionate and fun and inclusive. So I'm really excited about it, and they're doing a great job.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not trying to speak out of turn, but I believe you have told me offline that attending the Popcorn Frights Festival in the past was the first time you ever heard about F This Movie, correct?
Yes, that's very true. In 2016, I went to a screening of Francesca, and this guy in the audience was talking about your podcast. I was like, you know, I've never really listened to a podcast about movies. Maybe I'll give it a shot. And then I did. I followed everybody on Twitter, and now I'm writing for you. About the festival.
2016, now that's a good 6 years after we started. So what took you so long?
Again, there wasn't really like a genre community here. Uh-huh. So I didn't even know this was like a world to delve into.
Could it be that you were not yet old enough to listen to podcasts?
Oh, so this was all just leading up.
You know, it wasn't until the opportunity presented itself. And then I felt like I needed to.
I was actually not even old enough to use the internet without parental.
Oh my
guidance,
gosh. They had to sign a waiver and everything just so you could listen to F This Movie.
oh, wow, I can't believe you had this elaborate plan all along.
weeks I've been plotting. So the Popcorn Frights Festival is taking place in August. Please, everybody, read Alejandro's coverage over at Dread Central. And that actually is going to segue very nicely into the question that I always ask. Have you seen anything good lately?
Yes, Patrick, I have.
So natural.
I mentioned stop. I mentioned before to you that I haven't really seen anything new to me lately, but I've been doing a lot of revisiting and, you know, preparation for the festival and stuff. So they were having a screening on Friday the 13th of Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which was my first time watching it on the big screen, and it was so much fun. I mean, that's probably the funnest out of the franchise when it's not on the big screen, but when you're watching it in an audience, it's hysterical, especially the fire pee part.
I may take umbrage at it being the most fun in the franchise period, but okay.
I think it's really fun. I think, first of all, there are so many GIFs that have come out of that movie that I have in my regular rotation.
But this is Freddy with the sunglasses, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I wish there was a GIF of the dog peeing fire.
I can't believe there's not.
I know. I'm going to make one.
Yeah, it can't be too hard.
But it was really fun. And then we had like a Q&A with Mick Strawn, who's the production designer, I think. And so he like produces a lot of the sets. He was actually involved with Boogie Nights too. And he was so awesome. He was so amazing. He had like these pink sunglasses on and stuff. He was great. And it was just fun, honestly. But it's not my favorite out of the franchise.
No, of course not. Because that would be
Dream Warriors.
Correct.
Because it's the objective best.
So you revisited that one as well?
Yes, I did. And also in preparation for Popcorn Frights, because they're going to be screening that with Chuck Russell in attendance. And again, perfect movie. Love it. I think it's great.
Interesting.
I'm really attached to the characters
perfect
to see them
movie.
Like, I don't know why you're so hostile about me deeming this the objective best.
I'm not hostile about you deeming it the objective best. I just like the first one better. And by the way, again, 3 is really good. I think 3 is the best possible version of what the movies became. But my issues with 3, if you want to call them that, are it just that's where the franchise kind of turned into something that I'm just a little bit less interested in. And again, growing up, I was way into it. It's not I don't have like criticisms about the movie. It's just as I've gotten older, I don't know if you know this, I'm considerably older than you. And as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate the first one so much in terms of how sort of seriously it takes it and how scary it tries to be. And 3 is definitely like, hey, it's fun and there's one-liners and every character has one characteristic and that's that's what their dream is and then that's how they die. You know, it's a very specific formula, and then every sequel copied that formula. Well, I guess 4, 5, and 6 copied that formula.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I actually think 3 is still kind of like serious, and I think
more
four
so than
like,
4. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
4's like, F it, we're just gonna have fun with it, and yeah. It shows, and it pays off too.
Yeah, definitely. So, like I said, 3 is the best possible version of that sort of iteration of the franchise. It's just the iteration of the franchise that I like a little bit less than what it originally was. That's all. I have no problem with you loving the third one.
I don't know. I mean, I really can't explain why it's my favorite. It makes me so emotional, too. And I also don't have any clue why it does that. But I love it. And I'm really excited to watch it on the big screen, too.
Yeah, that's going to be super fun. That's one of... I've seen that one theatrically, and I've seen the first one. And then, like, New Nightmare, Freddy vs. Jason. But I've never seen 2, 4, 5, or 6. So I'm very jealous that you got to see 4.
Were these in special screenings or in the theater when they first came
these,
out?
Listen, New Nightmare and Freddy vs. Jason were first run, but one and three were both repertory screenings. I'm old. I'm not quite that old.
Okay.
Nice try, though. Nice try. Anything besides the two Nightmare movies that you want to mention?
So we all know about the Criterion sale going on. I got The Virgin Suicides, and I watched that, and it's still perfect. And I'm really excited to finally own it, which is, there's like a weird thing about me where I don't really own many of my favorite movies. Like, I don't own School of Rock, which we're going to talk about later. We talked about Singles last time. I also don't own that. And I think I need to fix that. So I'm starting with The Virgin Suicides.
All right. And I haven't seen The Virgin Suicides. I don't think, I also got the Criterion Blu-ray, but I haven't watched it yet. I don't think I've seen it since opening weekend.
Why?
I just haven't gone back to it. I have no idea why I've never gone back to it, because I've owned it on just regular DVD for like years and years.
It's just so feel good.
Well, that might be why. Yeah, it was just like, I don't think I want to feel that way again.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy, but I don't know. There's something weird about it that kind of like pacifies me, and it might be the way that it looks and just like, I don't know. She does a great job with all her movies, but this one in particular just like feels so dreamy. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, she does a thing where her movies kind of cast a spell. With the exception of maybe The Bling Ring. I think that's only one that doesn't do that. I mean, because even like, I didn't love The Beguiled, but it casts a spell, you know, like it's sort of hypnotic to watch it, and you can kind of lose yourself in how it looks and how it sounds and how it's paced and just sort of the vibe of the whole thing. The only one that I can't really lose myself in is The Bling Ring, which I just did not love.
I repressed that so far out of my memory that when you said it, I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That exists.
Well, listen, everybody, nobody makes a perfect movie every time. Except for Chuck Russell, okay. Of course.
Oh, of course.
Because we've all
seen... The Mask is such a classic.
Oh, The Mask is like his like fourth best movie. He's made way worse movies than The Mask. You maybe don't mention those when you interview him. But
oh, God.
Don't talk about I Am Wrath with him.
I think I have to stick to the movies that are being screened.
You're making the right call.
So, Patrick, have you seen anything good lately?
No, you know what? Nobody ever asks me, so thank you. School of Rock? Does that count? We're going to talk about School of Rock. Oh, okay. So I saw a movie from 2018. I just now caught up with it that I know you saw when it was originally released, and that is the movie Thoroughbreds, starring Olivia Cooke and Anya Taylor-Joy. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are.
Okay, good. And Anton Yelchin, may he rest in peace. I believe this was his last movie. It is a very sterile movie about two sort of terrible young people who are frenemies, which is a word that I think cool people say, and I want to seem young and cool to you.
Nobody cool says that.
Are you sure? Because you just heard me say it. So they are totes frenemies, which is the name of my new podcast, by the way. Please subscribe to Totes Frenemies with Patrick Bromley.
And me.
And you, of course. Yeah, we're the titular I almost said fremenies, which would also be a good podcast. I don't know how I feel about this movie. Like, it was very beautiful to look at. The performances are good, but very... it reminded me a little bit of... Did you see Killing of a Sacred Deer?
I actively avoided that movie like the plague.
It's, you know, that movie's trying to do something different, but there's a very specific sort of arch tone to the whole thing where everyone speaks in very sort of a very muted style, and the emotions are very cold, and it's to a purpose, but Thoroughbreds kind of reminded me of that. I was just listening to, I want to say, Shockwaves, and Elric had just seen it, and he said it's like someone made Heathers, but they took away all of the humor. And I thought, that's a good observation about the movie. So it's hard for me to say I liked it. I mean, I get what it's going for, and I recognize that it's probably a good version of that, but I don't think the movie did a whole lot for me.
I remember really liking it. Maybe that would change now that you compare it that way.
From like 3 months ago, you mean?
Well, yeah, but people change.
No, good point.
But I remember really liking it, and it actually genuinely like scared me because I was not expecting that ending. Okay. And I don't know, it was just very jarring. It was a little cold. It yeah. reminds me of Phantom Thread in that way, but now that I think about it, I don't know. I have to rewatch it. I actually, you said it looked really gorgeous. I actually don't like the way it looked because it was too minimal for me.
Sure, sure, sure.
But yeah, I really liked it, and the performances were good, and I really like Olivia Cooke.
Yeah, she's good in everything, and like I know Anya Taylor-Joy is talented.
Bae?
Yeah, no, she's very, very pretty, and I know that she's talented, but I feel like every one of her performances has sort of asked the same thing of her. Now, to be fair, I haven't seen, what's the movie where she's like a weird clone person? Morgan? I think it's called Morgan. Maybe she's not a weird
clone.
Oh, is
that
person.
The one that, about like the scientific experiment, and she's a scientific experiment?
Maybe that's what it is. I don't know why I thought she was a weird clone person. But she's in that
she
movie Morgan,
be.
And I haven't seen the movie Morgan. But like The Witch and Split and Thoroughbreds, I feel like they're all kind of having her do something similar, and she's good at that thing, but I would be interested in seeing her do something different.
I can agree with you. I actually really wasn't moved by her at all in Thoroughbreds.
What?
But
you can't be moved by anyone in that movie because, like, I don't know. It's
I was moved by Anton. I think he was really good in it.
He's always good.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, for whatever reason, watched a movie on Hulu called Half Magic. And I only bring it up because there's like a little bit of a witch angle. And I feel like you are the person to talk about this with. Half Magic stars and is directed by Heather Graham. And also stars Angela Kinsey from The Office and Stephanie Beatriz, who plays Diaz on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and is almost unrecognizable here because she's using her regular voice and not her like super deep Rosa Diaz voice, and it's very jarring. And they are like three friends who meet and want to sort of, it's sort of a female empowerment comedy, and I put comedy in air quotes because I don't know that it's very funny. And they all sort of want different things, most of them related to relationships and or sex. Heather Graham is trying to get over sort of some sexual repression that was programmed into her at a young age. Angela Kinsey is going through a divorce and, you know, has kind of a scumbag of an ex-husband. I forget what Stephanie Beatriz is going through. She kind of has an on-again, off-again boyfriend who doesn't treat her well. And so it's just sort of about them wanting more out of their, you know, sexual relationships, their romantic relationships. And there's like a little bit of them, you know, summoning some sort of Wiccan goddesses or something. But really, it's not about that. It's there's no real supernatural angle. It's more so just about how they lean on one another as friends. And it's like it's one of these movies that's like it's not very funny, but I'm so glad that it exists. Heather Graham has weirdly kind of gone off the radar a little bit. She doesn't show up in a whole lot anymore, and when she does, it's not necessarily like the most high profile thing the way that she was in like the late 90s, early 2000s when she was everywhere. So it was cool to see her writing and directing a movie. I think she wrote it. No, I'm second guessing myself.
Are you sure you didn't just watch The Witches of Eastwick?
You know what? Actually, now that you mention it. No, she did. She absolutely did write this as well as direct it. And she does a good job with it. And I think it's trying to say some things and do some things that a lot of movies aren't. And I can tell that these are things that, you know, Heather Graham kind of wishes were more part of the conversation, wishes that there were more movies about women that dealt with some of these things. So I think she does a good job kind of bringing those things up and putting them into a movie that's super watchable. I don't think it's great, but I would almost recommend it to anyone. It's not particularly funny. I can't promise that it's going to be memorable, but I just think that as part of a larger conversation, I think its heart is really in the right place, and I think she does a good job with what she has.
Okay, so I have to ask you.
Yeah.
Half Magic, better or worse than
Interesting. Magic? Interesting. So, oh gosh, Practical Magic, probably a little bit better shot. Like, I think Griffin Dunn is probably a better director than Heather Graham because this is her first at bat. I think it's a little more ambitious. I like the supernatural angle as part of the movie, but points in Half Magic's favor. It doesn't, Half Magic never becomes like insultingly stupid, which I think Practical Magic does. I'm not trying to offend you because there's a lot of stuff that I think in Practical Magic that is good, but there is stuff, and I think I've talked about this before, in Practical Magic that to me gets pretty insultingly stupid and involves like the neighbor ladies. I don't have a broom. Will a dustbuster work? Like, oh, fuck you. So
I think that's so funny. That's like what endears me to the movie. I know there's one scene where they use like whipped cream to like draw a pentagram on the guy's chest.
That doesn't bother me as much as like the neighborhood seance where everyone's a witch, but that's fine. Listen, maybe someday we do a Practical Magic podcast. Maybe we never do because now you realize that we have very different reactions to things in that movie.
Well, we have to do it because I've only mentioned it on every single
podcast. I know, yeah, but I don't want to make you mad at me when I'm like, oh, that dustbuster thing is so stupid. And you're like, that's what I like about it. This is not going to be helpful.
I think it would make for an interesting show. All right. I think our viewers should let us know. I think our listeners should let us know if they would be interested in a Practical Magic podcast.
All right. Do you want to get like a hashtag trending?
I actually don't know what the hashtag would be, but the overwhelming replies should be indicative of the fact that everyone clearly wants to hear me rant about Practical Magic for 45 minutes. Right.
Well, listen, I think I don't think there's any doubt that like you are going to get more support on Twitter than I am about pretty much anything. So I'm guessing there's a Practical Magic podcast in my future. Yay me. And I don't really know what else to talk about because I spent some of the weekend trying to watch the Last Drive-In on Shudder, and you know, by the time this podcast comes out, everybody knows that it was problematic. It didn't go great for Shudder because it was a live streaming event that was supposed to take place over 24 hours, hosted by Joe Bob Briggs. He was showing like 12 or 13 movies, and it was supposed to start 8 o'clock here in Chicago. And 8 o'clock comes and no one can get onto Shudder. Basically, it was so popular that they overloaded the servers and nobody could see this thing. So it took me about an hour and then I was finally able to catch the rest of Tourist Trap. But then what they did, unfortunately, was so once I got on, I was like, OK, well, as long as I don't log off of this at all, I'm good. And I'll just leave it going for 24 hours. And whenever I feel like watching, I'll drop in. Like the episode of Friends when they get the free porn and they're afraid to turn off the free porn because they're like, well, I'm going to lose it forever. That's all I could think about was Shudder, Joe Bob Briggs was free porn. So, but what they did was because it was designed to be broken up into like 12 or 13 individual programs that you could later stream on Shudder, they broke up the stream into 12 or 13 different segments. So every time they started a new movie, the stream died, and then it would take me another 30 to 40 minutes to get back on. It was not ideal, but eventually I was able to get on, and I just watched a bunch of it from my laptop. And so now they've made them all available, I think, sooner than they had planned because of the issues that they had had. By the end of the weekend, I think they were all up on Shudder to be streamed individually. So I've been trying to catch up with some of those, and it's really fun. I mean, I hope they do something like this again in the future. And I think, you know, major lessons were learned about how to handle it or how to...
My stream just didn't work at all. Okay. Everyone was like, oh, it's not working. I'll just sign on later. And then it eventually worked for everybody. Mine just didn't work at all.
Never
I
worked.
Have friends who like didn't get to watch it with everybody else. And that kind of... It's not Shudder's fault. But it turned me off to the whole thing because it makes me so anxious when I see everyone having so much fun without me.
Yeah. Well, and that was part of the problem is that, you know, the whole thing was designed to be this communal event. It's like when we do this movie fest, if like no one could get their movies to play, the whole thing doesn't quite work. You know, it breaks down pretty quickly. So, losing that community aspect, at least for the first part, was kind of a bummer. I know that a lot of people were watching it together and stuff. I didn't get super into like the the larger conversation with the hashtags and all that stuff, because I knew I was going to be catching up with it later. But if you are a Shudder subscriber and it sounds at all interesting to you, I really do recommend it. It's really fun to go back and watch these movies with his segments, and there's some really funny stuff. You'll learn a lot of stuff about the movies. It was really cool.
Awesome.
All right, School of Rock. Here we go.
Yes!
School of Rock.
And before we start, I would like to disclaim that I might get overly enthusiastic, and I really do love this movie, but upon rewatching, I have some problems with it.
Interesting.
I know.
Weirdly enough, this was maybe my third time seeing it. I know I saw it when it came out, and I think you might have been too young. I was
in the second grade, I think.
Right. So you were younger than the kids in this movie, and I was Jack Black's age, right? So this is great. So, and I saw it and I liked it and whatever. And I think, weirdly enough, when I saw it, I was like watching it as the new Jack Black comedy or the new Linklater movie. And so I thought it was okay. I thought it was slight, but fine and entertaining. And it kind of faded from my memory. And so actually watching it again today, for whatever reason, I was almost watching it today as a children's movie. And as a children's movie, I thought it actually played better for me today than it ever has.
That's funny, because I did watch this when I was a kid, by the way.
You watched it as a children's movie because you were a child.
Exactly. So I think it's really, you know, pretty awesome that I have both perspectives. So like,
we are Benjamin Buttoning this shit. I went from old to young, and you went from young to less young.
Well, yeah. But it's actually like one of my most seen movies of all time, because I fell in love with it as a kid. So you might be onto something about watching this as a kid's movie.
Yeah.
And that is in no way trying to like void this movie of any worth, because it's so good to me even as an adult. So
what is it that you love about it? Let's start there. And then what are your newfound problems with it?
Oh gosh. Okay. I'm very big on movies that involve music.
Right.
In a very, very significant way. And this clearly does that, especially music that I love. So that's the first thing and the most obvious. But also, I love Jack Black. I love Sarah Silverman. And she's not in this a bunch, but she's in it enough. I also think it has like one of the best examples of really good child actors.
Mm-hmm.
And did you know they're actually not all actors? They were musicians.
Yeah, that's they were
and so
cast.
Me actually, like, I didn't know that until today.
Yeah, they were cast for their ability to play more so than their ability to act, with the exception of maybe
Miranda,
iCarly, right? Yeah.
Did you see how quick I was with that?
Well, listen, you were again the target age group, because for years I knew that she was on a Nickelodeon show, and I didn't know her real name. I just knew that, like, oh, that's School of Rock. Like, she's the one who went on to have a career, and actually, her career on that show was much bigger than, you know, anything she did in School of Rock or anything really any of the kids did from School of Rock. So she kind of became a giant star. Miranda, what is it?
Cosgrove.
Miranda Cosgrove. iCarly.
But it was surprising, because how many child actors do we know that solely act, that suck, and then these are just musicians that are actually surprisingly really good. And I don't know, I just really like what the movie has to say, for the most part, because I do have some problems with it now, remember. And it's just so rewatchable. I watched it so often. I mean, I just saw it like 3 months ago, and I was so excited to get to watch it again. It's so endearing.
So I was watching it today, just kind of trying to figure out, because Richard Linklater, you know, has such a weird filmography. He makes these movies where you're like, yeah, okay, I totally understand why he made this movie, and this is a movie that only he could have made, right? And then occasionally he does these kind of bigger studio movies, and I don't always necessarily see what he sees in them. And I'm thinking specifically of like his Bad News Bears remake, which I'm guessing he made because he's a baseball fan, and was like a big baseball player, I think, in college. He might have gone to college to play baseball, actually, if memory serves. And even School of Rock. Like, I don't necessarily know I don't think there are major overt things that, like, he brings to this movie that somebody else wouldn't have. But I also, like, as soon as I say that, I know that it's kind of not true, because there are things that I see in this movie that I'm like, oh, this is the best possible version of this movie, and somebody else would have made a way shittier version of this movie. Because, like, guy pretends to be substitute teacher and starts rock band is a real dumb idea, right? But it's like a dumb idea on paper. Like,
to you.
I think it's a dumb idea in terms of, like, a movie plot, because think of how many garbage versions of this exact movie we could have seen. Some of them even potentially starring Jack Black, right? And what I like about what Linklater does is that he never makes it stupid, and almost pretty quickly tries to get past the whole premise of the movie. Like, it's a little sitcom-y, the premise of the movie, but he's like, oh, okay, yeah, let's move past that, and let's just get into this classroom and this guy's relationship to the kids and this guy's relationship to music. And what I really liked about it today, aside from Jack Black interacting with the kids, which I think was my big takeaway today, and I don't know if that's just because of my kids being of a certain age and being more aware of, like, relating to children, which is not something I could have experienced or known when I first saw this movie many, many years ago. But, like, I love, you know, there's a moment at the end where he, I guess spoilers for School of Rock, where he is, you know, all of his stuff in the classroom is just getting them to appreciate music, getting them to appreciate sort of the rock and roll spirit. There aren't all of these moments where, like, he helps one of them out with, like, a problem that they're having at home. And there's that little thing where, like, the kid's dad is kind of an asshole, and he finds a way through music of encouraging the kid to stand up for himself, right? That's as far as it goes. But think about, again, just how many different versions of this movie where six kids have six different problems, and over the course of the movie, he becomes a really good teacher and really takes an interest in them and helps them solve each of their problems. And, oh yeah, they also compete in Battle of the Bands and they win and blah, blah, blah. Like, any other movie where somebody is not a professional teacher who becomes a teacher is that garbage version of the movie. School of Rock doesn't do that. It really sticks to, this is about loving rock music, and I want you kids to love rock music, and we're all going to love this thing together. Because he gets on the bus at the end of the movie, and he says, I just want to apologize to you guys. That wasn't cool. And he says what is one of my favorite lines in the movie. You should never lie to your band. It's not about, like, I was an adult. You guys trusted me. You know, it's not cool to lie to kids or whatever. It's still about, like, we're a band and you shouldn't lie to your band. That it's so sort of singularly focused on this idea of the thing that we are creating together, right? The bigger, serving the bigger god of rock.
I'm about to cry.
Why?
Because that's so beautiful.
Well, I really like that, because, again, I was watching it today thinking of how many terrible versions of this movie could have existed. And I think this is the one, this is the best possible version of this movie.
Yeah, I think the movie really goes, like, super quickly from being about winning Battle of the Bands to, like, he just, oh my god, there's one montage. I don't know if you're a fan of montages, but I'm a fan of montages.
Well, it's like the greatest song in the world, so it helps. Yeah. Right? Is this the one with the Ramones song?
Yeah, and it's the one where he's like, there's like this huge diagram on the board of like the genres, and then he's just teaching them about like rock. And he's just so passionate, and I get overwhelmed when I talk about that scene because I get it. And you could just tell that it was no longer about winning Battle of the Bands, even before, like, he mentioned, hey, it's no longer about winning this.
Right.
And I think that's what Linklater brings to it, because you're right, it would have been about, like, these kids are really struggling at home, and I'm going to teach them a lesson that will help them, and now we're going to win Battle of the Bands.
And, like, and the lesson would have had nothing to do with music. It would have been, like, let me teach you this story from my own life, or whatever, like, I don't think it softens the character of Dewey ever, which isn't to say that he remains hard throughout the movie, but just his arc is kind of small. It's not about, like,
so small.
It is. And yet, I think it's pretty significant because it goes from, you know, he goes from a guy who wants to play in this band and is, you know, bummed that he got thrown out and cast aside and he's feeling rejected and a little bit jealous. But, like, that's not this super motivating factor for him. And where he ends
up, I think
it's
realistic.
Oh, it absolutely is. Yeah. And especially, again, the joke kind of being when you see who they replace him with. Which is just the biggest douche on the planet. But, you know, by the end of the movie, it's like he still wants to play music. It's not like he's decided to go pursue his degree in education or some, again, phony Hollywood bullshit. Like, he still wants to play music. He wants to play music with these kids. It's just that the thing that he has learned, the arc of the movie, is like he realizes his gift isn't only playing music, and perhaps his greatest gift isn't playing music. Perhaps his greatest gift is his passion for music, and sharing that passion is what he's on earth to do, instead of like becoming the best guitar player, the best rock star, whatever. That, like, he gets to a place where he realizes that, you know, the best thing he can do is share his passion for music with these young people.
And I was worried at one point when I started to consciously understand what was going on, I was worried that, like, it was going to become this thing where, like, they become famous and then the band that threw him out was going to regret it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad it didn't go that way either, because it just wouldn't be as effective to me or realistic, which leads me to my problems.
Oh boy.
With the film.
Okay.
So up until my most recent rewatch, I was like, Jack Black in this movie is my dream man. I love him. He's perfect. I'm rooting for you. But now, as like a 20, soon to be 4-year-old, I realize he is actually probably the worst person to be around. I think the band was totally right in throwing him out. I think Sarah Silverman, who I used to think was a huge bitch in this movie, was totally right in being pissed about her boyfriend's friend just smooching off of them.
Sure.
But I feel like the movie presents it in a way where, like, these are the antagonists. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, because I think the movie is told from his point of view. And I think in his worldview, yeah, anybody who's sort of preventing him from this life that he dreams of, this sort of singular focus on playing music, is kind of the antagonist, is kind of the enemy. But I think Linklater's a smart enough director not to turn those people into cartoons or caricatures where you could watch the movie and be like, yeah, but she's kind of right. And when she calls the cops at the end, like, she's sort of justified in doing that because these are kids. You know, she's abrasive, Sarah Silverman, in the way that she talks to him, but she's not wrong.
She's absolutely not wrong. And then again, like, this might not be the movie's problem. This might just be me, like, watching it at an older age where I understand what's going on.
Sure.
But it was kind of like, I had to take off my rose-tinted glasses.
I won't say it's the best Jack Black performance, because I do still think that his performance in High Fidelity is, like, the best use of Jack Black ever in a movie. I think he gets to do more in this. Like, this is, if you're going to give Jack Black a leading man performance, I think, you know, obviously this is so tailor-made to him, not just because he's funny and a little over the top at times, you know, when he's doing the thing with, like, his eyebrows shifting back and forth. Like, who is that for? Come on. Again, I'm watching it as, right. Well, I'm watching it as a kid's movie and I'm like, well, kids are probably laughing at that. And looks like I was right. But he gets to, you know, sing and goof around. And, like, when he does his little, like, vocal guitar solos, I always love it because it's just funny.
And he's so damn talented.
He is, yeah.
I truly believe that Jack Black is one of the most talented people around, because I think he can act.
Let's not go crazy.
Just let me rally for Jack Black right now. He is such a good singer. Have you seen Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny?
Of course I have. I saw Tenacious D live.
Oh, Thanks. I'm only more jealous now.
Oh, please.
But, yeah, no, he's phenomenal at music, and he's got a great voice, and he's just funny, and he seems like a really down-to-earth guy, and he's just the best. Jack Black, if you're listening, I love you.
I will say that, like, in 2003, I think I was way higher on Jack Black when this movie came out, because this is just maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years removed from High Fidelity, and I had been a Tenacious D fan, again, not to date myself, but in the late 90s when they had, like, their HBO show, I was watching it all the time, and I had their first album, and, like, I just thought the whole thing was real funny. And again, the genius of the joke for me is that they are really talented musicians, and their songs are really good, and so they don't fit the rock star bill, and they're kind of a joke, and their shtick is that, like, they have too high an opinion of themselves, but at the same time, they're also pretty awesome. And that is kind of the great joke of School of Rock, which is like he's quote unquote a loser who's like, you know, playing in this band with kids and pretending to be a substitute teacher and blah blah blah, but he's also really super talented, and all his musical stuff is really good. And so, you know, I was really appreciating what this, the room that this movie gives him to kind of screw around and show off what he can do. And again, I think the masterstroke of the movie, if I can say that the movie has a masterstroke, is Linklater really tunes in pretty early on that, like, what this movie is him interacting with the kids. That it's not just him up at the front of the room sort of showboating, which is, you know, is the first couple of scenes. Like, oh, he's annoyed with them, and give me a sandwich, and when's lunch, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. That stuff's not super interesting to me. It's not until he keys into this idea of, like, oh, these kids are really special and talented musicians, that the movie becomes interesting to me, because then it becomes about watching them bounce off of him, and I'm not watching it as these kid characters bouncing off of Dewey, the fake substitute teacher. I'm watching it as these kid actors bouncing off of Jack Black, the actor, and, like, him making them laugh and just, like, goofing around with them. And that, to me, is what makes the movie special, is sort of the interaction between those two parties.
I agree with you, and I also really like Joan Cusack's interaction with the kids this. And also, you knew this was coming, the Stevie Nicks scene.
That's right.
I have never been able to identify with a character more than her in that moment. So, like, she's probably my favorite character in this whole movie.
You know, one of these days, we're going to figure out that we never really appreciated Joan Cusack, you know, the way that we should have, because she's, like, always the best and is often underserved by the parts that she's given. Okay. I remember a couple of years ago, I went to see the Chicago Critics Film Festival. We're screening The End of the Tour, which is a movie I liked. And she came, and I think in large part because she's from Chicago, and maybe it was just an excuse to come back to Chicago and see her family or her friends or whatever. But, like, she's only in a couple of scenes in the movie. She's essentially given nothing to do. And I thought it was weird that she was there to promote it. And I was like, oh my God, if I had a crush on Joan Cusack in movies, like, that's nothing compared to my crush on Joan Cusack in person. She's never, you know, you can count kind of on two hands, maybe, the movies where she's really given great stuff to do. Adam's Family Values, Working Girl, Gross Point Blank, you know, there are those movies where she's given really funny stuff. And I don't think she's given a ton to do in School of Rock, but I think she creates stuff that wasn't there.
I also think, like, there was, like, a weird romantic angle happening that didn't go anywhere that I kind of wanted to go somewhere, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I'm sure, like you, I was just, like, what, shipping the, the,
oh, two. God.
Yeah, I'm using all of the cool phrases. Two of them, and then the movie kind of ignores that, because at the end it kind of has her, you know, flirting with the guy from the other band or whatever, which is fine.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily need to see them getting together or whatever, because, again, I think the movie tries to avoid a lot of cliches, and one of the ways that it does it is, instead of having them be sort of romantic, her connection with him is like, hey, you were the first person who, like, ever hung out with me. and got to see a side of me that people don't.
I think it just would have been cool to see, like, Dewey get himself together and then Joan kind of, like, let herself go apart a little bit, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Together, which I guess it does happen, just I wish they would have, like, developed it a little bit more.
The way that she plays that whole Stevie Nicks thing is, like,
so good. It's so funny. Like, you see it in her eyes.
And she never overplays it. It's just this weird sort of distracted thing where she's still trying to have this conversation, but super caught up in the song and being excited by it and, like, having maybe a little bit of a buzz. I mean, it's really, really kind of like a subtle thing that she's doing, but it's so funny.
It's probably my favorite part in the whole movie.
Yeah, and it's pretty great.
What, like 3 minutes?
Yeah. Who's your favorite kid in the band?
I was going to ask you that. In the band or in the band?
I don't explain the distinction to me.
Okay, if we're talking about just any of the kids in general.
Yeah.
I like, oh my God, there's this, okay, this is a really hard question for me. I really, really, really love the drummer because he's so punk. I really like the guy who's like, "You're tacky and I hate you," which should be the tagline.
That kid is funny. Yeah.
And I really, really, really like Tamika because I know we talked about how he doesn't help them with like their problems at home and stuff, but that one moment where she's like, "I don't want to go up there because you're going to laugh at me." And he just like, I'm about to cry. He like just levels with her and he doesn't patronize her. And he's not like, "You're still young. Like things will change. Mm-hmm. Just go up there and focus on the now." Like he's like, "No, I'm going through the same thing." And that like one moment made her one of my favorites because then she is the best and most talented one out of all the children.
I love that reaction shot of her parents. Like when they hear her sing, and again, you know, the movie sidesteps cliche because, like you said, yes, another worse version of the movie has a very different dialogue exchange between the two of them. But once again, he sort of relates it back to the bigger picture of playing music because it's like, yeah, I feel that same way. But when I'm up on stage doing this, it doesn't matter. I'm awesome and you will be too, you know. And so, again, it goes back to playing music is bigger than all of our day-to-day problems, you know. It's bigger than the things that frighten us or whatever. Like if we can just give ourselves over to that, it's going to help us. It's going to make a difference. It's going to give us confidence. It's going to give us something to strive for. It's going to make us better people. And I really, really like that message.
I like it too. And there's that one moment where like Lawrence, the piano player, he's like, "Oh, I'm not cool." And then he does the same thing where he's not like, "Oh, you know, whatever, like it's elementary school. You'll be cool eventually." He's right. Like, "Yeah, you are. Like I go through this too." And it's just, it's so endearing. And I wish I had that in school. You know what I mean?
Somebody to tell you that you were cool.
Well, yeah, but I meant just like, I think it's so important when adults don't patronize children.
Sure, yeah.
And I think that's maybe why I loved it so much when I was a kid, because I was like, yeah, this is, well, I probably wasn't intelligent enough to be having those thoughts, so never mind.
No, but you're absolutely right. Like at no point does he patronize them, you know. He's teaching them certain things about music or about rock music and kind of rolling his eyes at like, "Oh, I can't believe you guys don't know this," sort of disregarding the fact that they're, you know, 12 years old or whatever, which is, I guess, the joke, right? But he never...
That's one of my favorite parts in the movie, too, is when he's, like, disgusted that they don't know who Motorhead is. Motorhead? Oh, what did they teach you guys here?
But he's, like... Again, it's always true to the character. The movie doesn't sell him out, you know? I mean, there's a few, like, kind of plot contrivances and the kids still playing the show even after they've been found out and all that, you know, that's movie stuff. Okay, whatever. But like, I don't think the movie ever sells out his character or his character's ideology, which I think is really important.
I think, I mean, again, it's just realistic and what would probably happen. Well, no, he would have gone to jail for sure, but despite
not
that,
gotten to open his own rock school that parents continue to send their kids to.
Despite that, if we're suspending disbelief a little bit, I feel like that's what would have happened. Like, he would have grown up a little bit, but he wouldn't have, you just don't lose your passion when you grow up. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
So
I do, I love but that I recognize that other people don't. I died inside years ago.
Oh God, what does that have to me when I'm your age?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's so far down the road that you don't even have to worry about it right now.
What's your favorite song? Here's a better question. What's your favorite song that's used in the movie that's not original? And then what's your favorite original song? There's only like two to choose from. But
my favorite original is the one that the kid writes. I love that.
So you don't like The Legend of the Rent?
I don't necessarily like The Legend of the Rent, even though I was going to talk about the scene where The Legend of the Rent sort of comes together.
It's so good.
It's great. And again, Linklater shoots that in like one take, right? Is that just like a long take?
I if I'm remembering correctly, it is.
It's either the scene where it comes together is one long take, or the scene where he sort of writes it is one long take. I can't remember, but there are a few of those moments, and I'll come back to my favorite non-movie song in just a second, but there are a few of those moments in the movie where he just lets the camera run. We just kind of joked, I think, about the end credits. Oh, where he gets to open his own rock school or whatever. And the end credits are just over one long scene of a song, you know, being played by the band and him sort of teaching, and it's really fun and it's really charming. And then there's that other moment earlier on where, again, I like that he just lets the camera run and that the scene becomes about the process of creating this thing. That it's not about the performance of the thing. It's about the way that it comes together.
I'm like overwhelmed with how much I love this movie. Like, I want to watch it again when we stop. And it's just fun despite like all these lessons we're learning. It's just a really good time. And I think I almost want to say that like Jack Black kind of improvises some of it too during those long takes that we were just talking about.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, definitely. And it is fun, and that sometimes gets lost. I just recently was thinking about or watching a trailer to, I don't know why this movie popped in my head. Begin Again. Did you see Begin Again?
Oh, with Mark Ruffalo?
Yes.
Yes, I did like that a lot.
See, I'm less of a fan of that movie. I think the music in the movie is really good. I think it has some interesting ideas. But I think it's a little bit... it's a lot...
Forgettable.
It's phony in a way that School of Rock isn't. And I think if you were going to put the two next to each other and ask people, like, okay, what's the better movie about sort of like songwriting and creating music, I think most people are going to point to Begin Again because it seems to take it more seriously, and it's by adults, and John Carney, this is the thing that he keeps coming back to, whether it's Once or Sing Street or whatever.
I was just going to mention Sing Street.
Yeah, because they're all sort of working with this same idea of this process of creation, right? That all of the movies are about that concept. And I think School of Rock is a lot more sort of low key about the way that it approaches that, but I think it's more successful in a lot of ways than maybe two of those other movies. I think Once it does it really, really well too. There's a scene in Once that where the song comes together in the studio that like can move me to tears every time, mostly because it cuts back to the engineer who like is sitting up and taking notice, like, oh, I wrote these guys off, but this is actually really, really good. And that the whole romance in that movie is sort of contingent upon creating something together. And that's why they fall in love. So I think that movie does it incredibly well. But I think School of Rock does, too. It's just it's not quite at the forefront because it's disguised in all of this, like Jack Black dancing around a classroom, pretending to be a substitute. Isn't this wacky? Like, and it sort of distracts you with that and you don't realize kind of what's actually going on underneath.
I also think like the movie deserves some credit for not going there with the wackiness, because it could have gotten really bad really quick, and I don't think it ever does really.
Yeah, no, I think for the most part it keeps Jack Black reined in. And earlier in the podcast I was saying like in 2003 I was much more into Jack Black, and I think one of the things that has diminished, that makes me less excited to see him in stuff is like. 15 years of bad movies, which isn't to say that everything he's done has been bad, but unfortunately, like a lot of comedy stars, they start to sort of oversaturate themselves, and you see them doing the same thing over and over again, and it becomes tired. It becomes overly familiar.
So you're saying you don't like Jumanji?
I like Jumanji. I'm not crazy about Jack Black in Jumanji.
Oh, I really like him in that. But again, I might be biased.
No, I think a lot of people do. And I don't think he's bad in the movie. Like, I think seeing the trailer, I was like, I am not interested in watching Jack Black mug playing a teenage girl. I think when you see the movie, he's not doing that. He's actually kind of downplaying it a lot more than I anticipated based on the trailer. So it's nowhere near as bad as it could have been.
I honestly am having a hard time thinking about a movie where Jack Black is, like, over the top. The way that you claim.
Okay. It's not just about him being over the top. It's about it being unpredictable, like, or not unpredictable, about it being predictable when they bring Jack Black into a movie. You kind of know why they're bringing Jack Black into a movie. And yeah, it's more about the movies themselves being garbage than it is about, so let me roll some titles off here. We've got, okay, so post School of Rock, right? We have Envy. Did you see Envy? I bet you didn't.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Where he invents like a spray to make dog poo disappear. It is not good. Nacho Libre.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
See, not a very good movie.
Another one I repressed out of my memory.
Year One, not great. Gulliver's Travels, not great.
Good. Also not good. Okay, all right. You've proven your point.
They're not all bad. I mean, he has made good movies in this time as well. Absolutely. But it's like a lot of times when Jack Black shows up, it's like, oh, okay, I know what he's here for. You know, he's been good in stuff in that time too. But there's just been a kind of a run of Jack Black movies where I was like, all right. Anyway.
It's okay, because School of Rock makes up for all of them.
And he never is quite as, like, goofy and cartoony, like you said, as he could have been. And those moments where he is, once again, I'm watching it as watching Jack Black making the kids laugh. Like, when he goes over and kicks the hi-hat over and the kids laugh, I have to believe that's just a thing that happened on set. And so that it endears me to that moment, because I'm like, oh, Jack Black the actor is making these actor kids laugh, and Linklater leaves it in the movie. And I really like that.
I really want to, like, know that that's true. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, so, back to my question.
Yes. Okay, so my favorite my favorite song is the one that the kid writes. I don't love the final version as much. I mean, I like the guitar solo. It's a little too polished at the end, but when he's first just, like, playing it, like, here's this thing that I wrote, I'm like, man, that's a really catchy song. Which, didn't Mike White, like, co-write that song? I think he did.
Oh, Jack White?
No, Mike White, the screenwriter of the movie. Not Jack White.
Like, what?
Mike White, the screenwriter of the movie and co-star of the movie.
That speaks a lot to our personality traits, because I prefer the really, like, over the top theatrical.
the Legend of the Rent?
No, I like...
Oh, the song at the end. I was like, The Legend of the Rent just speaks to the weird Hobbit fan in you.
Legend of the Rent, when he was describing it, he's like, smoke.
Yeah, exactly.
That was amazing. And I thought about it, and I was like, that would have been so good. I wish you would have gotten that.
Because you love Middle Earth.
I imagine it like the Spinal Tap performance with Stonehenge.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My favorite non School of Rock song is probably the aforementioned Ramon song that plays during the montage.
For me, besides Stevie Nicks,
obviously,
I really like the Sand of the Immigrant song in it. I don't like the Immigrant song. I am a huge Led Zeppelin fan before anyone crucifies me, but that scene makes me like the song for like 30 seconds.
Is this where he's singing it to Joan Cusack? Oh, he's not singing it to Joan Cusack. That's a different song. He's just singing it to the kids in the band. Yeah, yeah.
Rehearsal from like the audition.
And he's doing his crazy eyebrows and stuff.
He does the most unsafe thing, and he looks back while he's driving with a van full of children. illegally.
Yeah.
And he's singing Led Zeppelin at the top of his lungs, which is something I often do. So that's probably my favorite.
So here's where I out myself as the absolute worst person you know. You ready?
Oh, I'm excited.
I have never, and still do not, love Led Zeppelin.
It's okay. I'm not even surprised anymore when you say things that...
when I have horrible takes on things. Could you expect it? You're just like, oh, he's about to say something stupid and shitty. Of course.
Dream Wars isn't the best Nightmare on Elm Street.
I'm not trying to be that guy, but you put on that voice and now I feel like an asshole.
But, okay, I mean, that's fine. You're wrong.
I know fine. I'm wrong. I know I'm wrong because there are millions of Led Zeppelin fans who, you know, obviously prove me wrong for whatever reason. I just never got into the whole Led Zeppelin sound, you know, and I feel like I've heard a lot of it. I respect what they did for rock music and sort of what they've influenced. There are certainly a handful of Led Zeppelin songs that I like, but I've just never been a big Zeppelin guy.
I think you're more into like the very like raw and like stripped down kind of music, because I know you like the Replacements and you liked this stripped down version of
That's true.
I wouldn't peg you as a Zeppelin fan anyway. Okay.
All right. Well, good. As long as we can still be friends after I've made this confession.
Thank you for being so honest with me.
If you listen closely, you can hear hundreds of people unsubscribing from this podcast, which is a real bummer.
They don't want to do that before the Practical Magic episode.
So keeping with the theme of like movies about rock, because you even said you really like movies about this subject, what are some other like rock and roll movies that you really like?
Well, I really like Singles. We know that.
That's true. And your favorite movie is a rock movie.
Yes, it is. My favorite movie of all time is Almost Famous.
Yes.
Which was actually screening here, and I couldn't go watch it, which is super heartbreaking, but it's amazing. I also really like Sing Street. I was going to make a Rock of Ages joke, but I couldn't just get it out.
Because you were going to make fun of me, or because you really like the movie Rock of Ages?
Why was I going to make fun of you?
Because it had the word rock and the word ages in it. I just assumed you were teeing up an old person joke.
Damn it. Missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's all right. Wait, so do you like the movie Rock of Ages?
I don't remember it.
Okay. Can I remember it for you? It's not good.
Sure.
It's like aggressively not good.
But isn't it like a Def Leppard musical?
It's like just like an 80s musical. There might be a Def Leppard song. And I'll tell you, man, I was into the idea of seeing it live. Like when I knew that it was a show, I was like, hey, if that ever comes to Chicago, I'm totally going to go. P.S. I didn't. And then when I started to see the trailer, with the exception of the, what's her name? The blonde girl. She was like a reality TV person and, she's the lead and that did not interest me, but I was like, yeah, I'm on board for this movie. I like the trailer. And I thought, you know, the casting of Tom Cruise was interesting. And he certainly gives it his all. Like the failure of that movie cannot be laid at the feet of Tom Cruise, but I do not love that movie.
Maybe I should rewatch it and actually focus this time.
Probably not.
I feel like I would like it.
Well, maybe. If I don't, there's a good chance you might.
Let's see. What else? What about you? What are some of yours?
Velvet Goldmine.
Duh. Well, does Phantom of the Paradise count?
Fuck yes. That's obviously the best one.
That's obviously a really good one.
I stupidly just typed rock movies into Google, and all I got were Dwayne Johnson movies. So I'm going to say Rampage and Baywatch. Yeah, for sure. Phantom of the Paradise counts. You know, that thing you do isn't really
Spinal
like...
Tap, of course.
That thing you do isn't really like a rock movie. It is a music movie and kind of a band movie. It's one of my favorites ever, but it's not really like a rock and roll movie.
Have you seen Pirate Radio?
I've never seen Pirate Radio.
Oh, it's so damn good.
Okay. You are literally the first person I've ever heard say that, which isn't to say that I've heard other people say it's bad. It's just that no one person has ever talked about the movie Pirate Radio until now.
I mean, again, maybe it's because A, the music in it is phenomenal, and then B, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoy that movie. It is a little slow, but it's really good. Walk Hard.
Walk Hard is fun. I just had another really good one, and now I can't remember it. Velvet Goldmine. Phantom of the Paradise.
You're clearly thinking about The Rocker.
It's not The Rocker. Oh, by the way, I meant to bring up The Rocker earlier. The Rocker is watchable. It shows up on HBO, and I can put it on and watch it. But The Rocker is like the shitty version of School of Rock that I keep talking about. You know what I mean? Where, like, his only motivation...
Really?
I think so, yeah. Where, like, just every beat is some studio-mandated dumb thing, and, like, the character is pretty unlikable the whole time, and his only motivation is to get back at the other band, and, like... It goes to completely unrealistic places. I guess spoilers for The Rocker, like the reveal that the better band is lip syncing and they're humiliated, and so the great
like
Emma Stone band,
which
I have not seen. but it's,
I actually, The Rocker is another one of my most watched movies.
Oh my god, what is happening?
But it's just because it has my favorite Peter Gabriel song in it, which I know I could just watch. Say Anything for
The Rocker. The has Say Anything in it, or Say Anything. No. Just, God, in your eyes, I knew
positive.
In my head it made sense, but in your eyes, The Rocker has In Your Eyes.
Yeah, I believe it does.
I don't remember that. I remember thinking that, like, the music that the band
played at the prom. They played at the prom.
I don't. There's a prom.
Really, like, soft. Yeah, you don't remember shit about The Rocker.
No, I literally watched it, like, not that long ago, because it showed up on HBO, and I was like, I gotta watch the rest of this. I have a soft spot for the female bass player, and so we have Emma Stone playing a bass player, and of course,
I also have a soft spot for the female bass player, which is why I really appreciate that this movie has, like, a badass chick be the bass player.
She's great, yeah, she's really cool. I can't remember much about The Rocker, but Rock and Roll High School, obviously, great rock movie.
I mean, it's in the title.
Yeah, well, exactly. Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, great rock and roll movie.
The Runaways?
Yeah. The Runaways is, like, not quite as good as I want it to be, but it's not bad. Like, and our mutual love, Kristen Stewart, is unbelievable. Like, her Joan Jett is easily the high point of the movie. The rest of the movie is
all I needed.
Yeah, the rest of the movie is a little bit like, oh, I just wanted this to be a little bit better because I was really excited to see that movie. But there's enough in it that I like that, sure, I'll count it. What else? Did you ever see... I'm just looking at a list online now. Did you ever see the documentary Dig?
No.
I think you would really love it. It's about the Dandy Warhols and the Brian Jonestown Massacre and sort of this rivalry that takes place between them, where it's like one band is clearly better but kind of self-destructive, and one band is way more commercial and therefore having more success. And it's just a really interesting portrait of these two things.
Is it streaming anywhere?
It might even be available to stream for free in a few places, but I'll look for it and send it to you if I can find it, because I think you would really like it.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
What about The Doors? Would you say that biopics are like rock movies?
I mean, if they're about rock stars and, like, feature a lot of music in them. Like, I think The Doors tries to be a rock and roll movie. I think it's...
Oh, it's so bad.
It's I mean, but there's,
but
like...
I've seen it so many times.
I have, too, because I was, like, obsessed with seeing it as a kid. I think it came out, and again, this is literally, I think, before you were born, but whatever.
By,
it came
out 3 years. You were definitely not a kid then.
It came... what? Yeah, take it easy. It came out around the same time as Silence of the Lambs, and I remember my friend's parents were going to take us to a movie, and like drop us off. They were going to buy us tickets to a rated R movie and drop us off. And it was like a Sophie's Choice situation. I was like, do we see Silence of the Lambs or The Doors? I really want to see The Doors. Ooh, but Silence of the Lambs is kind of a horror movie. We ended up seeing Silence of the Lambs. I didn't see The Doors until VHS. But I was like,
you feel like that was the right choice.
It was definitely the right choice. The Doors didn't go on to sweep all of the Oscars and become an all-time classic. But I was weirdly obsessed with the movie The Doors. Like, Val Kilmer, I think, is on another planet, good in that movie. I really like the photography. I really like the music. Like, there's so much about that movie that I like, except the movie is a mess and kind of miserable to watch.
It's so depressing. Yeah. And here's the thing. I'm about to do what you just did with Led Zeppelin. I don't even like The Doors very much at all.
There's a handful of, like, if you put on The Doors' greatest hits, I'm on board for half of it, you know?
Maybe Touch Me and, yeah. Light My Fire.
Break On Through.
Oh, no, I hate that song.
You hate Break On Through?
It's too much.
I like Break On Through, I think, in part because it's, like, short. And The Doors didn't have a lot of short songs. It's like, oh, 2.5 minutes, you're in and out, cool. People Are Strange.
That's why I like the other two that we... Oh, I like People Are Strange,
Of course you do, Lost Boys.
That's to the Lost Boys. Exactly. Yeah, jinx!
Yeah, so there's a handful of, like, Doors' greatest hits that I like, but I'm not, like, a big Doors fan. And I also think part of that has to do with when I was in high school, there was a whole contingent of guys who like got way into The Doors and like smoked pot and thought, right, they would wear like tie dye and they would like talk about how they love The Doors and they just thought they were so like deep and like they were just,
my God, yes,
idiots, you know. And it's the equivalent now of like kids in high school who are like into Nirvana. Like, that's literally the age difference now.
Hey,
no, I'm not criticizing people who are into Nirvana. I'm saying that, like, people liking music from, you know, 20 years ago when I was in high school was The Doors. Now it's Nirvana. So that's just a weird thing.
Well, you would be surprised, because the only reason I even watched this documentary and listened to The Doors to begin with was because, like, all my friends were, like, listening to Sublime and Pink Floyd and The Doors. And, like,
why is Sublime in the same sentence as those other two bands?
Well, because Sublime is, like, the pothead band and Pink Floyd is also the pothead band. Yes. Where have you been?
I don't know. Being an adult?
Sublime has a song called Smoke Two Joints, or I think that's what it's called, but it's about smoking.
Why would I know any Sublime song except for, like, whatever was on the radio?
Because you were already an adult when they were at their height.
Well, exactly. That's why I wouldn't know it.
Well, that's true.
I have an ability to tune out Sublime.
Back to movies.
Yes. School of Rock music. Anyway, I don't know what else to say about School of Rock.
God, I just feel like if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it, even if you're not, like, a music fan. I know we kind of sold this as, like, this is such a good movie about music, but it's way more than that. It's really funny. You're going to laugh a lot. It's super fun. Yeah,
it's a weird, I feel like it's a weird movie in that I think the things that it's doing well in terms of sort of what it is trying to say, and I don't mean that, you know, School of Rock has this great thematic message, but I do think it has an ideology, and I don't think it leads with the ideology. I think it's, on the surface, it's this, hey, Jack Black is goofy and he, you know, plays guitar and goofs around with kids. I think it is a deceptively smart and sort of warm movie disguised as just like a goofy, you know, star vehicle for Jack Black.
I just think it's really sweet. I don't know. I really love it. And it does make me feel like really good once I'm done watching it, because it makes me feel like, hey, like, my passion for music and even for movies can, like, be used in a way that doesn't mean I have to be, like, super successful in that field. Yeah. I can use it in other ways.
Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, then I guess we'll wrap it up, but thank you for talking School of Rock with me.
You're welcome.
It was fun. What, if you joined the band tomorrow, what instrument are you playing?
Well, I would either play the keyboards or I would be the vocalist.
Oh, wow. Look at you. Front and center.
Yep. What about you?
I would play the bass. Nobody pays attention to the bass player. That's why I
started
playing
bass. Are you
kidding?
The bass players are like my second favorite.
Yeah, exactly. Your second favorite. No one ever says the bass player is my favorite. No one ever.
I thought you were going to say you'd play like the triangle or something.
No, I actually do play the bass, so it would be easy. But I started...
You do?
How did you not know this?
I don't know. You never told me that. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
I was in like a band and everything. We played shows. We were like, we had CDs.
I wish you could see my facial expression right now.
I thought you knew all this.
I didn't. I really didn't. Can I have one of your mixtapes?
You don't. Oh, stop it with the mixtapes. I yell at people constantly about mixtapes and using that expression wrong. Because they're like, yeah, you know, it's when an artist like puts all their songs out. I'm like, that's not a mixtape. That's just an album. Like, a mixtape implies a mix of music. Anyway, I'm old. I started playing the bass specifically because I was like, well, everybody ignores the bass player, so I can just stand in the background.
I highly disagree with you. Bass player, again, is my second favorite.
Second favorite. What is your number one favorite?
He's the best member of Metallica.
What's your number one favorite?
What's my number one instrument?
Yeah, what's your favorite? If bass player is your second favorite.
Drummers are the best.
You are a Martian. No one likes drummers the best.
Except Led Zeppelin fans, which explains why you think nobody does.
Good point. Anyway, all right. Well, this opens up a whole new conversation, but that's all right. This was fun. Thank you. Remember, everyone, to check us out at fthismovie.com and follow us on Twitter at fthismovie, or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Next.
And.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Remember to let us know if you want a Practical Magic episode.
Oh, shit. That's right. Anyway, next week, the return of L.A. Doug. We will be podcasting one of the Mission Impossible films in preparation for Mission Impossible Fallout, still my most anticipated movie of the summer. I am looking forward to it. I hope you guys are too. Thank you once again, Alejandra. This was fun as always.
You're welcome.
We will talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.